Hello, you're joining Alex Stewart for the very first Low Tox Life show, the very first podcast. I'm so excited. Now, there are so many topics I have in the wings for you guys. At this point in time, I've pre-recorded actually 7 shows. So when I was trying to decide which show do I bring everybody first, I thought I would bring us something to break down some of the barriers, some of the embarrassment, some of the taboo, some of the shame around poo. Why? Because I believe to live the low tox life, a beautiful conscious life where we thrive and we make gorgeous choices for our health, for the planet's health, poo is one of the most powerful windows into the soul of our overall health picture. And there are just so many fascinating things about this topic. So I've invited Helen Patteron onto the show to chat to us today. Helen is an incredible holistic practitioner, naturopath and clinical nutritionist, and she has over 15 years experience as a practitioner. So this woman has seen a lot and she's talked about poo a lot, and it's one of her favorite subjects to talk about. I'm like, why would it not be, right? So I've invited Helen along. There is no stone left unturned. I'm just going to read into everything as a poo pun. I know I will. No stone left unturned in today's interview. I've even asked personal questions about myself recovering from antibiotics, having had a recent surgery. So there's some really interesting twists and turns we take, everything from how poo should be, what is not so good and you should go get checked out, and how we can build super healthy digestive systems so that we can obtain these crazily elusive perfect poops that she talks about in this episode. So I hope you enjoy the first show. I hope you stop thinking that you can't talk about your poo with your practitioner or your doctor, because it's a great place to start when you've been feeling a bit iffy, because it can just tell us so much. So enjoy today. Welcome to this Low Tox Life podcast, first episode kickoff. I hope you enjoyed as much as I did. Helen, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks, Alex. How are you?
I'm so fantastic. And, you know, like, it's making me giggle. It so shouldn't make me giggle, but we're talking poo today.
Oh, and I love it. I love to talk about poo. I talk about poo every day, Alex.
Well, I know you do in your clinical practice, but the problem is most of us don't, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, for some reason, it's not only just in clinic for me. It happens at family dinners and lunch times and all sorts of places where you might not expect to be talking about poo. But obviously it's on my mind a lot. There's actually a shop I drive past sometimes in Roselle, and it's called the Stool Shop. And it makes me giggle every time I drive past it.
I love it. I love it. For anyone out there who's listening who's Australia-based, there's the Who Gives a Crap company who sell incredible toilet paper. And, well, if toilet paper can be described as incredible, it's more what they do with their profit share that's incredible, doing incredible work for clean water projects and toilet building in developing world countries. But they are the kings of the poo pun.
Yeah, and we've got a couple of bathrooms full of Who Gives a Crap.
Yeah. It's just magic to get their emails for the simple fact that it's like great comedic reading. It's so funny. Anyway, we're here to talk much more clinically about the whole poo thing today. But can just for the people who don't know you, can you just tell us a little bit about your career so far? You know, what got you into clinical practice in the holistic sense, as opposed to maybe the medical model? And
sure. So I am a naturopath and nutritionist and herbalist, and I have been practicing since 2001, so a good 15 years now. And I guess what brought me into this line of work in the first place was a couple of things. One was my own health growing up. From the beginning, had a lot of things going on with asthma and eczema, recurrent infections, recurrent bronchitis, digestive issues was the first thing I remember going to see a doctor for, joint pains as a child, or, you know, you name it. I had a lot of inflammatory and kind of immune and digestive things going on. And I guess I was always a little bit of a greenie and a carer as well. So I had been looking at doing things like nursing or being a park ranger after leaving school. And so when I came across naturopathy, I thought, oh, well, that's actually a really nice blend of the natural world and caring. And I had been playing around as a teenager with some essential oils with my niece and noticed that she would respond really positively when she was ill when I'd use them. So it really just piqued my interest. And so that's how I got into the naturopathic field. And then, yeah, I guess 15 years in clinic consistently, I've done a bit of writing as well, a chapter on pediatrics for a clinical textbook called Clinical Naturopathic Medicine. I've also written Bubba Yum Yum, The Paleo Way, with Pete Evans and Charlotte Carr, which is a great resource for new parents and grandparents.
It's a wonderful book.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Yeah, we love it. So we're very proud of it. It was a lot of work and definitely a labour of love, but really happy that we have it out there now. So yes, and working on a few other projects at the moment as well, another book coming up and the like. So a bit of a varied career and always plenty on the go, yeah.
Always plenty on the go, that's the way we like it.
Yeah.
So poo's really interesting, and the reason I've brought you in to talk about this is not only because I know you're super passionate about de-tabooing this discussion,
yeah,
but also because you're a great clinician and you really love getting into the science behind why things are the way they are and how we can improve them in the clinical setting, but in terms of lifestyle, how much we can do. A figure I know that you mentioned is 80% of everybody's health problems can be done right at home but with a few small changes.
Yeah, so, that's right.
Yeah, and the thing with poo that I find super interesting is that when we're a new parent, you've got your baby, it's the only thing you talk about with everybody. Everyone's talking about the poo, and you know that when the child is sick, before they can even talk, you know that one of the best ways you can tell if they've got an infection brewing is that their poo changes. Mm. Why do we stop talking about poo?
Yeah, it's so true, isn't it? Suddenly it all of a sudden becomes taboo, and this you know, this icky, gross thing that we no longer talk about. I don't know why that is. I'm sure there's a whole host of different reasons, but I kind of live in a bubble where talking about poo is quite normal. So I'm not inhibited by the taboos, that's for sure. And I think it's so important to be able to talk about it because it is one of the best things, you know, everybody does it, right? Some people do it too much, some people don't do it enough, but everybody does it. And it is an opportunity for everybody to have a glimpse at what is going on inside the gut. And what is going on in the gut is a big reflection of, or a big trigger for what can go on elsewhere in the body as well. So, you know, Hippocrates said hundreds of years ago that all health or all disease begins in the gut. So knowing what's going on there and understanding that gives us a lot of empowerment to be able to improve our health in many ways.
It really, really does. And like maybe we should start with the visual of poo. So you see it. What's good poo? What's bad poo? What's too much? What's not enough? Talk us through it.
Yeah. So shall we start with the ideal poop first?
Yep. Let's go. Okay. Let's go with the perfect world scenario. Okay. Good plan.
So let's go for a good poop. So basically what we're aiming for is when you're going to the loo, you need to be having a bowel motion at least once a day, okay? So ideally 2 to 3 times a day, but you want it to be once. And when you go, you want it to feel like it's a complete evacuation, not like you've still got some tenants in the bowels, right? So everything's got to be moved out. And that's when you're going to get that nice endorphin rush. Everyone knows how good a good poo feels. Well, everyone who's done a good poo knows how good a good poo.
Really? So we release endorphins after a good poo.
That's why it feels so good.
Wow. That's hilarious. I didn't know that. Great.
There you go. So you want size and shape-wise, you're aiming for something like a big banana or something with a little bit of an S shape because that kind of represents the shape of your colon basically. And you're looking for 1 to 2 inches in diameter. and up to 18 inches long. So you want
inches.
You want to pass as quite a reasonable amount of matter. Okay. Now, smell-wise, it's not all just about how it looks. Smell-wise, you want it to have a good neutral earthy smell, nothing offensive, yeah? Color-wise, you want a good mid-brown. I often have a paint chart from the hardware store in my room so people can point to their poop color for me. And texture-wise, you want it to be soft but firm, so it's easy to pass. It doesn't take much wiping, if any. There's no straining or staining or smearing. And, as I mentioned before, a nice complete evacuation.
Wow.
So that's what we're after.
And I think there might be quite a few people out there who, like me, just went 18 inches. You've got to be kidding me.
I know. Well, you know, it does depend somewhat on, obviously, the individual and what they're eating, how much they're eating, what their activity levels are like. All these kinds of things do affect the amount of poop you're going to pass. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, up to... So not you're not necessarily looking at 18 inches, but up to 18 inches.
Okay, cool. Now, okay, so what are some of the not so desirable outcomes?
Okay, so we've got quite a few to keep an eye on. So, and if you've got any digestive issues at home, I really recommend that definitely start taking note and encourage your kids to do so as well. And if you need to make a chart or something with these kinds of observations on there, then do that. Because when you do go to see a health practitioner, particularly someone along the naturopathic or nutrition lines, this is a very valuable information. Okay. Mm.
And you mentioned there encourage your kids. I think that's a really important one because most parents will spend the first 4 years of a small child's life going, oh, God, I can't believe I need to clean up this small human's poo again.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we finally get to that phase where they can do it themselves. Everyone's high-fiving. Off they go, close the door, and we're not involved in their poo anymore. So if we're not staying open about that conversation with them and making them feel like they should come to us or know for themselves when something's not quite right, that's not so good. So it's important that we don't leave them to their own devices.
Yeah, for sure. Mm. And I mean, I think it's good to, you know, kind of just make light of the conversation as well. It doesn't have to be this, you know, embarrassing
thing
to talk about. And I think you've met Willow, Shah's little boy, and obviously poo's been a big part of their conversation over the years. So, you know, he'll do a poo and he'll come out and be like, I did a good one, Mum, or it's a bit runny today, or, you know.
Yeah.
So, just really engage in that conversation so you can know what's going on. Because it tells us a lot. So what kind of things to look for? Now, color-wise, if it's a bit pale, then often it can be an indication that your liver might need a bit of support because you're not producing enough bile.
Okay.
If the color is affected by food, so if it's green after you've eaten heaps of greens or red after you've had beetroots, this is the beetroot test, by the way, if that is affecting the colour of your stool, then you want to look at stimulating your digestive acids, your stomach acids.
Okay.
If you're producing enough stomach acids, then basically that will break down the pigments. So regardless of what you're eating, unless you have something like charcoal or there's a few medications as well, but basically regardless of what you're eating, it should come out looking the same. Beautiful brown color.
That is so interesting because before I did some digestive work a couple of years ago, I definitely failed that beetroot test. It was always like, oh my gosh, what's wrong with my poo? You know, before you kind of joined the dots and went, ah, ate beetroot,
that's right.
All good.
Yeah, that's right. I've spoken to quite a few people over the years who've had a panic about, oh my God, I'm bleeding. No, it's just beetroot.
Yeah, so that's something we should get. You know, some work done.
It's a good little clue. Okay, I need to stimulate my digestion. So, and I've noticed in the past as well, like if I am in, you know, good nick, not stressed, eating well, chewing my food, all that, all the things that we should ideally be doing, then, yeah, things like beetroot aren't going to affect me. But if I've been really tired or stressed and therefore perhaps not digesting so well, that's when I'll notice it will affect my stool.
Mm, and that is such an interesting thing to mention, the word, the S word, stress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because stress takes us away from being great digesters.
Absolutely.
And puts our energy in our extremities, doesn't it? It's that fight or flight thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, there's so much to be said for even if you've got a busy, hectic life, you know, so many of us do these days, to not let it overtake us and to make sure we have a couple of moments in the day, you know, even if it's 10 minutes of just breathing and bringing our adrenals down and chilling so that we, even right before a meal, that would just be an incredible thing to do.
Yeah, even just a 1 minute pause before take 10 deep breaths and, you'll digest a lot better.
Interesting. Yeah. And it's funny, isn't it? We, you know, we laugh at, even if you're not religious, you'd appreciate the notion of grace or giving thanks for a meal and sitting down and, you know, and my family doesn't do that, but we do have a little chat and then we say bon appetit and it's like a little precursor to the meal.
That's right.
Which is just it's a lovely part of
is part of digestion.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Okay,
absolutely.
Keep going.
So colour-wise, again, we're still on colour. So if it is black, this is where you want to definitely be taking note and getting looked at straight away. So if you're getting black in your stools, unless you've been taking, you know, poorly absorbed iron or poor forms of iron supplements, or you've been taking activated charcoal or something like that, black in the stool can be from bleeding further up the intestines. So by the time the blood gets to the bowels, it's gone black.
Wow.
So if it's bright red blood that you're noticing, usually that's from hemorrhoids or fissures and is quite common when there's been a history of constipation, for example. So colour-wise there, that's what you're looking out for. You don't want your poop to be floating right on top. If it is, then that can be a sign that you're not breaking down your fat so well, because fat will make poo float. If it's hard or in pieces or you're having an incomplete evacuation, then that's basically constipation. So some people think, I'm going to the toilet every day so I'm not constipated, but constipation goes beyond that. You need to be having a complete evacuation and you need to be able to pass stool without any straining. Otherwise, you could still be constipated.
Okay. We'll come back to that a couple of times for a couple of different reasons, but, yeah, keep going.
Yeah. And then undigested food in your stool can be an indication of not enough digestive acid production or inadequate pancreatic enzyme production. So looking again at ways to stimulate your digestive acids and enzymes would be important then. If your stools are really skinny rather than being nice and fat, that can be an indication of a couple of things. One, it can be an indication of overflow, basically, or a bit of bowel obstruction. Now, that could be from impacted feces. So basically, this is a kind of constipation where you've got so much feces that is basically stuck to the lining of the gut wall that there's only a really narrow tube left through which stool can pass, and so then you get these skinny poos. Skinny poos or ribbon-like poos can also be an indication of obstruction from tumours and things like that though. So that's in the extreme situation, but it is important to, you know, keep bear in mind that it's not always just constipation.
And it's not normal. Go see someone about
right.
it.
That's right. Either way, do something about it, because constipation can increase your risk of things like bowel cancer as well. So if you are doing those skinny poos, you want to get that fixed anyway.
Absolutely. And I really want to stress here, find a health practitioner partner to work with. Don't assume
don't
you just go to the chemist and take, you know, some sort of fiber shake that they try and sell you for constipation, because you could do yourself more harm than good because you're not addressing what's causing it in the first place.
That's absolutely right. Mm. Yeah. So then again, textualize, if you've got loose stools, that can be a sign of a number of things. It could be food sensitivities or intolerance, things like celiac disease. It could be parasite infection like Blastocystis or Dientamoeba fragilis.
Oh, that's what my son had. Yeah.
All fun little bugs to address.
Oh, and that was the smelliest poo I've ever witnessed in my life.
That's it. Yep. So if it smells offensive, then usually there is either an overgrowth or infection, so overgrowth of bacteria or yeast or an infection from parasites. If it's got a really strong sulfury smell, that can be an indication of the parasite Giardia. So having a look at addressing that would be important. If it's quite explosive, it can be explosive for a couple of reasons. It could be from things like Clostridium. So Clostridia infection can create explosive stools. But quite a few overgrowths of bacteria that produce gas basically can make your stools a bit explosive because you've got all these pockets of air that you've got to expel. Mm-hmm. So that is another thing to consider. And yeah, the other thing to really look out for is whether you can notice any mucus in your stool. So it's normal that there'd be a little bit of mucus in your stool because your gut is lined by mucous membranes, but if you generally can't really see it to the naked eye. But if you have excessive mucus production and you can see it on toilet paper in the water bowl, then that's also a little red flag to say, hey, there's probably some inflammatory process going on here, so you want to have a look at why that is and sort that out. So
could that one, that particular one about the mucus, also be sometimes just because of a common cold or a chest infection?
I haven't seen that so much, but it's, possibility, I guess. When you do have a common cold or chest infection, that's obviously affecting your mucous membranes too, and even if you have a think about it, the mucous membranes in our respiratory tract or ear, nose and throat are connected. Like it's literally the same piece of tissue.
Same piece of plumbing.
There's no break in it at all to the mucous membrane that is lining the gut. It's literally one bit of tissue. So what happens in one area can affect what is happening with the other. So that's why on the reverse of that, we do see that when there are issues with food sensitivities that it can create the ear, nose and throat mucus.
Of course. Okay, so you've mentioned it. Are you done, by the way? Is that like how many more wrong poos are there? So obviously there's the sight and smell test, but there's some pretty amazing testing that you can do, which I've actually just had done myself. I love being my own little experiment of one, and there's a resistant weight loss issue. You know, I'm not overweight, but I'm definitely not the normal weight that I would have been pre-child, for example.
Yeah.
And I did a test that ended up exposing that I had zero bifidum, zero, none of it. This super beneficial family of bacteria did exist.
Yeah, yeah.
And so could you talk to us, because I just think that was such a revelation for myself to now be able to do such a targeted program around that finding. You know, a lot of people want to get the test done, but then sometimes they maybe go to a regular GP. Not that I'm saying there's anything wrong with GPs. They're incredible for the function that they serve the community for. Yeah. But there are some pretty amazing tests that you would get done with a naturopath that it seems aren't in our main medical system.
Yeah, that's right. There's integrative GPs who
and this is the same for the UK, tests, the America. It's all of us. It's not just Australia. Yeah.
That's right. And we're really fortunate in Australia because we do have access to an amazing lab here, Bioscreen, that does fantastic stool testing. So when we're talking about specialised poo testing, we're looking at fecal microbial analysis basically. Well, there's a few different ones. There's a comprehensive digestive stool analysis done through a few labs, and then there's the Bioscreen fecal microbial analysis. Now, comprehensive digestive stool analysis does give a bit of a breakdown of what kind of bacteria, yeast, and potentially parasites are growing or not growing in your gut. But it also shows, you know, were there any detectable vegetable fibers, meat fibers, were there any detectable levels of certain enzymes that are markers of inflammation or anything like that. On the other hand, the fecal microbial analysis, it basically just tests for the microbes. It doesn't test those other things like the veggie fibers. Now, I use that more, the BioScreen one. The reason being is that for me, I find it more useful in that it gives a much more specific breakdown of what is growing in your gut that shouldn't be and what isn't that should be. Mm-hmm. And that is essentially what is going to be contributing to things like not being able to digest your food well, creating inflammation, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I prefer to look at the microbes more specifically than anything else. And when we consider that we're made out of 10 times more microbes than we are human cells, you start to get an idea of how significant it is that we're playing host to the right kind of bugs, right?
Oh, totally. We want to have the right guys over to our personal party.
That's
it just
right.
makes
That's
total
right.
sense.
Yeah, so yeah. we want to play host to good tenants so that the tenants then look after us, right?
Totally. Mm. Yeah.
So, when we're looking at the testing, we're looking to pick up things like candida, E. coli levels. Like E. coli gets a bad rap. It's got bad PR, but
we're supposed to have some, right?
Yeah, it's actually one of the most important bacteria in the bowel. Mm. So without it, things go really wrong and we can get these massive strep overgrowths and then we get this massive lactic acid production in the gut and then that affects our digestive acids and enzymes and our immune function. It can affect our cognitive function and our word recall and memory and our sleep patterns. You know, like it's what goes on in the gut does not stay in the gut. It's as gastroenterologist Alessio Fasano, one of my big nerd crushes, says, you know, the gut is not like Vegas. What happens in the gut does not stay in the gut.
I love that. It's not like Vegas, baby. Mm-hmm. No.
That's right. So, yeah, then we need to look at our other beneficial bacteria like the Bacteroides and Lactobacillus and Bifidobacteria. And then potential pathogens like Clostridia and Klebsiella and that kind of thing. So, all of these different microbes serve a purpose for us. So we need to understand why they're there if they come up in a stool test. And we also need to obviously understand why some might be missing. And they literally carry out hundreds of roles for us. There's things like vitamin production, amino acid production, short chain fatty acid production. You know, they're a primary source of vitamin B12, for example. So
that's really interesting because we think of vitamins in us as being solely able to be procured by what we put in our mouths.
That's right.
Can you just elaborate on that? Because I'd say there would have been a little bit of a what? We make vitamins?
Yeah, well, we don't, but our tenants do. So, we've essentially got these little vitamin and amino acid and short-chain fatty acid factories inside of us. So just like humans eat and poop, bugs eat and poop too, but fortunately their poop is valuable to us, yeah? So their byproducts of metabolism are these nutrients that we use. So they'll make amino acids like tryptophan, for example, which is important for a lot of things, including neurotransmitter production, which is why if we have undergrowths of certain species of lactobacillus and bifidofactor, it can affect our moods and behaviour and cognitive function. E. coli makes a lot of butyric acid, which is really important for using as fuel for our colonocytes. So our colonocytes, all the cells lining the colon wall, eat that up and that helps to, they use it for energy and it helps to keep them strong and well nourished. So if we don't have enough E. coli, then we can often get weak colonocytes, basically, that don't have the same kind of integrity or resilience.
Right. And can I ask, just using myself as another example here, I feel like I'm getting a private consultation.
This is so private.
Just with a few thousand of our friends. Yeah. Now, when I would therefore have had a really terrible UTI last year, which was found to be E. coli, which I was then put on, unfortunately, I like to save it for absolutely only when I need it, and this time I really did, antibiotics, that would that have naturally sort of built back up its store, or should I have been doing something to build that population back up after that?
I would definitely recommend, if you are needing to take antibiotics, that you do do some work to repopulate.
Okay.
Basically, studies show that it takes a good 3, but more likely 12 months to restore gut flora after antibiotics.
Yeah, it's just 3 to 12 months.
Yeah.
And people honestly, unfortunately, are led to believe that a couple of tubs of yogurt is all you need to do. Antibiotics.
Yeah, not really going to touch the surface, especially most commercial yogurt is, you know, maybe fermented for 3 hours or something like that.
Yeah, so important. And, you know, this is why it's just, I cannot stress this enough. Get a natural naturopath if you're in Australia, or a naturopathic physician if you're in the US. Just get one in your corner, because you can use in tandem both systems to their best advantage.
Yeah.
And both are looking out for you with the things that they each both know so well how to do, you know.
That's right. And I think while we're talking bugs as well, it's really important that, you know, in a situation where you're having antibiotics and it's a one-off kind of thing and you need to do a few months of probiotics afterwards, generally speaking, taking a multi-strain kind of probiotic can be a good approach. But otherwise, when I'm working with anyone to address any chronic immune, inflammatory or digestive issue, I am actually very hesitant to prescribe a probiotic without first having done a stool test, because you can have overgrowths of good bugs as well, and then they're no longer good. So it's quite common for there to be overgrowths of lactobacilli. Some people have overgrowths of bifidobacteria, and about 98 or probably 99% of probiotic supplements have those two families of bacteria in there. So it really pays to be picky about what kind of probiotics you use, because that can make the difference between, you know, some people will take a probiotic and go, oh, I didn't really feel any difference, or some people will take it and go, oh, I feel worse. Well, that could be because A, it might not have been very good quality in the first place, or B, it might have bugs that you don't need, or C, it might have bugs that you've got too many of. Or it might be exacerbating other bugs that you've got too many of. So
that is fascinating. So you can literally throw the balance out even worse by taking probiotics.
Yeah,
and that's something a lot of people, you know, we're so black and white, aren't we? We're like, probiotics are good. We must take them, or we must eat them through our sauerkraut, or we must, you know, and not for everybody, not all the time, which is why, once again, comes back to seeing someone who knows your specific case, as well as getting the tests you need to make the judgment calls that your clinician needs to make for you and with you.
Yeah, that's right. It's so important to get that kind of individualized approach. There's good general guidelines, but most of us aren't general. Yeah, most of us don't fit in the average.
Yeah, exactly. That's so true. Mm-hmm. Now, I might bring up one more thing that does, yes, again, I'm going to admit it, have something to do with me and a recent medical procedure I had to have on my eye. I had a blocked tear duct. And unfortunately, it wasn't one of those ones that you could just flush out with a saline solution. I had to have a whole board through my nose and up and a stent put in. Thank God it's silicone. At least I felt better about the fact that it wasn't plastic.
Yeah.
But what obviously happened to me straight after the operation was I got put on a Panadol IV. I got put on an eye antibiotic, a gut antibiotic, And I've just finished a week of those. And what I can tell you, and my audience now knows more about me and my poo than my own family probably knows, which is hilarious. But, you know, I'm doing this for us guys, is that my poo has turned into nothing too sinister or anything, but it's those little tiny rabbit pellets, just one after the other. And I'm eating truckloads of veg. Is it just going to be something that resolves itself over time, or is there something?
I would say
post-op, can we do something to support, perhaps minimize the level of damage these things can do to us?
Yeah, I would look at doing a bit of targeted support for you myself, considering what you've just been through. That's a bit of a ringer. And we know that things like Panadol, for example, can wipe out E. coli, and we know that low E. coli can result in constipation. So, that would be something to consider.
Yeah, okay, cool. Because, you know, so many of us have to have an operation, or a kid has to have an operation, and you can't get away with not taking a course of antibiotics after an operation. And I have to say I'm quite grateful for them, because
only when needed. And I think these days, unfortunately, for the last couple of decades, we've used them far too frequently. But they are a life-saving medication, and they should be used as such.
Cool. Mm. So, thanks for talking about that, because I think we feel like we, in inverted commas, get over the operation process mm-hmm. itself and get on with our lives. But maybe there's a bit there of clean parts up of our bodies that, mm-hmm. yes, as you say, super duper important to do a bit of a cleanup.
Absolutely.
Okay, let's come back to constipation. How do we go about getting to the root cause of it? As you said just then, we're all so different. Are there any general rules of thumb, or perhaps some kind of checklisty items we could go through to get to the root cause of constipation?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there can be a lot of causes of constipation. Yeah, it can be things like not having enough fluid, not being hydrated enough. We're often quite dehydrated these days for a couple of reasons. A lot of us don't eat enough veggies, which is a great source of water, or drink enough water, clean water itself. Veggies provide the other benefit of providing good quality fibre as well, and it is a food source that our bugs thrive off without giving them a bit of a sugar party. So things like starches, really starchy foods, can create a bit of dysbiosis, because bugs have a bit of a feeding frenzy on there, but the slower to digest fibres from veggies, particularly above ground plants, are really good.
Awesome. That's so just because we're right there, and you've literally just alluded to this, mm-hmm. Grains, therefore not the amazing saving main staple of our diets we believe they should be, right?
That's right. So in fact, the fiber in grains can be quite abrasive for starters. So increasing fiber from grains can actually be counterproductive and create more irritation. Gluten-containing grains as well, if you've got leaky gut situation going on, you can actually get an opiate-like effect from it, because gluten peptides, so partially broken down gluten, looks very similar in shape to opiates. And so it can cross the blood-brain barrier and attach to opiate receptors. And anybody who's taken opiates, like codeine, for example, will know that one of the side effects of that is constipation. So these foods can be really constipating.
Yeah, absolutely. And feel good, which is the worst part about it.
Yeah, that's right.
Very literally confusing when something gives you that kind of chilled out buzz, and mm-hmm. you think, well, that must be good for me. But no, unfortunately, it's no better than a harsh painkiller medication.
Yeah. Well, it's probably a bit better than that.
Well, maybe, yeah. Yeah. I just want to hammer a point home. Let me hammer my point home.
I get your point. But there's some other really simple tips as well in terms of dealing with constipation. One of the biggest ones is chew your food, yeah? So how many people are just, you know, and I'm guilty of this at times as well, because who's not in a rush these days? So we're in so much of a rush that we often just inhale our food rather than chew it. And it never ceases to amaze me what a difference chewing makes. Like when I have been out of rhythm and wolfing down my food, I definitely feel a difference with my digestion. And then I make a point to chew my food. And it's a good little exercise to say do a week of chewing every mouthful 20 times, for example, because in that time you will be amazed by what kind of an impact it has on your bowels. Yeah. So there's a good little challenge for you. So chew your food. It's really important to be in routine as well. Like everything in life is a rhythm. Yep. So whether it's days, nights, seasons, our body clock, our, you know, monthly rhythms, or there's so many rhythms that our body and our hormones are dictated by. And when we're out of rhythm, that often impedes things like our bowel habits, for example. A lot of people will notice this when crossing time zones and doing international travel can really affect bowels. And one of the reasons for that is that change in that disruption in rhythm. So, you know, routine and rhythm, going to bed at a good time, ideally by 10 o'clock, getting a good 8 hours.
There's a whole bunch of people that went, okay, she's just lost me. I'm done.
Ideally, I said, you know, things aren't perfect all the time.
I like to aim for half the week.
Yeah, good one. Yeah. Good one. And then things like digestive bitters or lemon juice or apple cider vinegar in water 20 minutes before meals can be great. Mm-hmm. I definitely recommend not drinking water with meals. So you want to leave a 20-minute gap either side of eating.
Yes. Everyone is always tortured by me stopping my child drinking mid-meal or having water with a meal. I'm like, no, he's had a drink of water just before dinner. Yeah. He's done. Yeah. Doesn't need it.
Exactly.
Chew and better.
That's right. And that water with meals is just going to dilute and alkalize those digestive acids. Yeah. Mm. So for good digestion, we need not to be drinking with meals.
Yeah.
And liver support herbs can be fantastic for constipation, because sluggish liver activity and sluggish bile production can cause constipation, and that can then actually put more of a load on the liver as well, and it becomes this vicious cycle.
Yeah.
So, there's some beautiful herbs for liver support, like dandelion root, St. Mary's thistle, burdock root, all sorts of beautiful herbs to use for that.
Brilliant. And can I just ask at this point, only because people naturally kind of believe that anything you buy over the counter is safe and good for you and fine, would there be any kind of a product out there that you could go, oh, I wouldn't mind supporting my liver today, might go to the health food shop and grab one off the shelf that says liver support? Is it safe to do that?
So long as you're getting from a good source, most of the time brands that are available to the general public are reasonably safe to take. You know, obviously it's far better if you can see a practitioner, because then you can make sure you are getting something that is actually suitable for you and your needs, because there's a whole different range of types of liver support preparations, and some are going to suit some people better than others, depending on, you know, what else is going on with your health. Are you taking any medications that might interact with? All of these things should be taken into consideration. So I'm much more a fan of speaking to a practitioner. You can get some really beautiful teas, though. I think herb teas are a nice safe way to go. So those herbs I just mentioned before are available as loose leaf herbal teas from Good
Herb. Yeah, great.
Yeah,
and
so they're
maybe
good.
People who are on a bit more of a budget, who think, oh, I just don't have the $100 to go and see a naturopath, and that's completely understandable. So I just want to reiterate, there's always something you can do. So I'll give you a little
that's
tip
right.
here, is to go to a health food shop that has an in-house naturopath so that
Absolutely.
You can at least have a few brief to and from questions, and she or he can help you with you in mind, because this whole frenzy of buying herbs online where you've got no help, certainly no naturopath to tell you, oh yeah, you might want to just watch out for this if you're already taking that, you know, it's just that human contact is so important.
And when you're buying online as well, you don't know the source of the product, and especially if they're products from overseas, they have often far laxer guidelines than we have here. So, yeah, you want to make sure that what you're getting is actually what it says you're getting, and that it's appropriate for you, and that you'd be taking it at a dose that's going to be effective as well.
Awesome. So for constipation, as a little checklist you can start doing with your on your own, it's up those veggies.
That's right.
Experiment with taking down the grains a notch or two, even experiment with removing gluten if that's not something you've already tried.
Casein is an opioid-like peptide as well, so gluten and casein out.
Okay, great. And then step two is to just maybe dip your toe in the water with some liver support and see if that helps by either seeing a naturopath or an in-store naturopath in a health shop. That's anything right. else?
There's a few things, like you can use psyllium husks or slippery elm powder or flax seeds or chia seeds. They can help. Again, this is, you know, general guidelines. There'll be some people who might feel quite bloated on one or other of those things. So starting off on a small amount, like half a teaspoon, for example, would, and then slowly building up until you find your effective dose. These are bulking agents. So rather than being laxatives, they will help improve bowel habits, whether you've got diarrhea or constipation. The way they do that is if there's diarrhea and too much water in the bowel, it will absorb that and create a nice solid soft poop. And if there's not enough water in there, they'll draw water into the bowels. But it's important that you drink plenty of water with it if you're taking it for constipation, and then it'll soften the stool and make it much easier to pass.
Okay, great. Now, something that I found really interesting at the recent Mind Foundation conference was hearing one of the biomedical pediatricians talking about this idea of fecal loading. Now, I've heard of carb loading for marathons. I'd never heard of fecal loading, slightly different. So basically, from what I can understand, is that built-up poop can build up inside you, and that you've kind of briefly touched on that already. And you can be going every day, but still technically, because of how much is built up inside you, you can still be actually constipated.
Yeah, that's right. And it can actually present like diarrhea, because it might only be watery stool or watery matter that's actually able to pass through the small gap that's left in the lumen, or the, you know, the tube of the intestine, because it's otherwise so full.
Okay. So that's what you were talking about before.
Yeah, so it can look either look like diarrhea, or it can come out like a really skinny poo, and both of those can be indications of that fecal impaction. Often you can get clues around that, as there'll be quite a distended belly, abdomen. There can be quite a bit of tenderness on palpation, so when you press into the abdomen, particularly around where you find the colon. So
is that that valve between the...
That's the iliocecal valve.
Yes. Yeah, you that's where my chiropractor
Very tender. So you can get a very tender iliocecal valve. That's where the small intestine joins the large intestine. But then all around the large intestine can be quite full. And on, if necessary, some kids and adults for that matter are sent off for x-ray, and you can see the impaction on x-ray.
Wow. And how do we fix that? Is that an enema sort of situation?
Yeah, that can be done through a few different methods. So regular enemas is one way. You know, one is not going to do it, but you need to do quite a few to gradually loosen up the material that's it's like it's concreted to the sides of the wall, yeah, so it can take a bit of time to loosen it up. So, yeah, enemas are one. A little later down the track, colonic irrigation for not so much for kids, usually more for adults, can be utilised. Magnesium oxide salts can be used for a bit of a bowel flush, but it should. I would prefer people do all of these kinds of things. You know, if there's fecal impaction, you're wanting to get the guidance of a practitioner so that you don't end up causing yourself more pain by trying to flush things out inappropriately. Yeah,
I can never say see a naturopath enough. I really can't.
Yeah.
It's just amazing how much people try and do on their own and make some pretty massive guesses at their own health off the back of someone's blog post. And there's nothing wrong with the writing of a blog post or a podcast indeed like this where we discuss the issues, but, you know.
Use the information and talk about it with your practitioner.
Yes, exactly. Use it as a clue to go, you know what, I need to see someone because they mentioned this, this and this and I'm actually ticking all those boxes.
Yeah.
So it's time for sure.
Absolutely.
Okay. So let's move on to this funny little thing called the poop, the adult squatty potty.
Yes.
Now, it sounded very posh when I said that, squatty potty.
Squatty potty.
is it a yay, nay, does it really help?
Oh, I'm a big fan, hey?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
I love a good squat. So as humans as well, we're really designed to squat. And if you go to any developing countries, you'll still see the grandma squatting as their resting position. Yep, so we might be squatting on the side of the road as they, are chatting to the neighbours or cooking up a meal or whatever it is. And it is actually the perfect position for us to have a poop in as well.
Mm. So, is that how we achieve that elusive S-bend you were talking about at the beginning?
Yeah, you can get a much better formed stool, like a longer stool, because it doesn't get cut off. There's a ligament that kind of loops around the colon.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're seated, that ligament is kind of pulled tighter.
Mm-hmm.
And so it puts a kink in the colon, whereas when we're squatting, it's loosened, and so there's no kink in the colon, and so your poop can pass through freely.
Fantastic. Mm. Makes sense.
Yeah, and it's particularly good if you've been suffering any constipation or you've been needing to strain. You don't even need to invest in a expensive custom-made squatty potty or anything. You can just get a stool, a small stool to put in front of your toilet and just use that.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah, I think, we often think, okay, so that means I've got to buy some really,
specific... just a little kitchen footstool or something like that.
We can go DIY on that one.
That's
good.
Right. Yeah.
Now, what are your top foods that we should be really looking at? You've mentioned obviously the gluten, the casein, that can tend to back us up.
Mm.
Is there anything else you want to add?
Gluten and casein would definitely be two of the biggies, and having too much protein or too much meat can be another one.
Mm-hmm. And when you say too much, of course, everyone's like, but how much?
How much?
What's the perfect amount? Tell me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I would say there's a couple of different guidelines. One is roughly the size of your palm is a portion of protein and one portion max per meal.
Mm-hmm.
Or about 100 grams per meal.
Okay.
Alternatively, the other way you want to look at it as well, because some people, particularly if they're quite athletic and doing a lot of training, might need a bit more protein. Pregnant and breastfeeding mums would need about 25% more protein. But you want about 80% of your plate to be veggies.
Absolutely. And this is the thing, when you start bringing that meat down, not only am I a huge fan of the environmentally friendly aspect of that, but also the fact that you obviously still need to fill up. And if you fill up right, that's eating truckloads of vegetables.
Yeah. And that's one thing I love about using paleo as a foundation to build your diet from, basically, and where there is so much misconception as well, because a lot of people hear paleo and I don't know, thanks to media or something, think of cavemen's eating bacon on top of a steak on top of a leg of lamb. And it's actually quite a low meat lifestyle. So you're definitely putting a, or wanting to put a focus on largely plants. I like Michael Pollan's little eater's manifesto, you know, yeah. Eat too much, mostly plants. So yeah, mostly plants on your plate, a small to moderate amount of protein, and then good fats, and you're sorted.
And only because some people will be very much just starting out on their journeys out there, what do you mean by good fats?
So good fats, if you're cooking, you want to use things like coconut oil, ghee, organic tallow, organic lard, organic duck fat, things like that. Mm-hmm. You can get organic tallow very cheaply by making your own bone broth and then saving the fat on top to use in
That's
your
what
cooking.
That's what we do, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and it's amazing. It's my favourite fat.
Yeah, we do it with pork belly as well.
Yeah.
We have a full jar of pork fat and it's
That's
there
right.
in the fridge to use.
That's it. Same if you roast a duck or anything like that. So you get to, you know, it's a beautiful no-waste kind of lifestyle as well, where you can eat really nutrient-dense foods and do so really frugally. So, yeah, they're good fats to cook with. And for using raw, we're talking extra virgin cold-pressed olive oil, macadamia oil, and then nuts. Fats from nuts and seeds, so not in their oils, but eating the nuts and seeds.
The actual nuts and seeds.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we don't want to be having any, almond oil or peanut oil or anything like that in the diet, because they'll be high in omega-6 and usually quite rancid and cause oxidative damage. But eating raw nuts and seeds in moderation, avocados, olives, all that kind of thing, provide great fats.
Also tasty as well.
Absolutely. It's what I love about real food. It tastes.
And you just need to learn a few simple cooking techniques that make it all delicious all the time, and you're sorted. The excitement shifts from the processed food packet of weirdness shelf, as I call it, to the nature's bounty shelf, you know, the basket.
Absolutely.
Which is just so much more, just makes sense. At the end of the day, it just makes sense.
Yeah.
So can I ask then, you know, I know obviously you are a big proponent of using paleo as a foundation. However, are all grains evil? Like, should we really all, because there are some cultures in the world who eat and seem to thrive on having grains as a part of their diets. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, so I don't necessarily think, I don't think grains are evil.
Yeah.
But I think, there's a few places to go with this. So
this is one, a part two. I'll speak to you in 2 months,
this is a
isn't
question
it?
Question to answer at the end of a podcast.
I'm sorry. I'm going with the flow.
It's all good. So generally speaking, these days we've got way too much starch at our fingertips, first and foremost. Yep. So eliminating grains is one way to dramatically reduce starch content in the diet. Mm-hmm. Grains for a lot of people can be quite inflammatory. Gluten containing grains the most in that respect. But what I find is a good approach is if you are wanting to achieve optimal health, you want to get to a baseline level that you have something to compare how you feel with. So this is where I really like to use paleo, because if you're getting all the most nutrient dense foods in that are typically the easiest to digest, right?
Yep.
So you use that as a base. You do that for a good, ideally 10 weeks, so that you give your body a really good chance to see what it's like to feel on eating that kind of way. Then if you are, you're not trying to deal with any dysbiosis, intestinal overgrowths and things like that, which will require you to have a low starch diet to recover from, then you can look at introducing, see how you go on some quinoa or some buckwheat or maybe a little bit of rice, and just make note of how you feel. Do that N of one. You know, everybody is a bit different. So everybody's
going to poops like afterwards.
Yeah, exactly.
As well. Yeah.
Exactly. Take note of your poop, what's happening there. Mm. So your body will tell you what suits you and what doesn't, but you need to get a bit of a baseline first. Otherwise, you can't see the forest for the trees, right? If you're already suffering from chronic health issues, whether it's something quite overt and severe or whether it's just mild little niggly things and low energy and a bit of brain fog and that kind of thing, if you don't kind of strip things back to the essentials, then it makes it very hard to know what's doing what, because it can take 72 hours for us to have a sensitivity reaction to a food, for example. So if we've got in 72 hours, in 3 days, we can be eating all sorts of different things, and it can be really impossible to know what is causing us to feel what. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay. By winding things back, you get to a bit of a baseline, then you can reintroduce things and see how you feel. And if you are introducing grains, and things like sourdoughs and fermented grains are and gluten-free ones are the better way to go, or the place to start. Mm-hmm. Same with dairy. If you're going to reintroduce that, I'd recommend fermented and from the best, cleanest, least processed source possible.
And the least processed source possible is key, right? There's grains and there's grains. Just like anything else, there's varying degrees of not so greatness.
Absolutely. It's a spectrum.
Yeah, totally. Now, where should we finish? Okay, I've got an idea. we've kind of covered, well, right at the start, we really covered the good, the bad, and the ugly. So I think people have a really good idea of at what point they might be needing to go see someone about what's coming out in their toilet. But what about like your favorite tips? When we were talking about like the circadian rhythms and having rhythm, that kind of all equates to nature.
Absolutely.
Could you just kind of help us have a look at what a good poop routine might look like?
Yeah. Well,
what should we be aiming for?
In terms of timing, or
yeah,
what are
like
we talking?
Is there a time of day that's best to like literally put pooing into our routine?
Well, often first thing in the morning is considered ideal. Mm-hmm. And then
like before food even?
Yeah, even before food. If we're looking at body clock rhythms as well, often around the 6 to 7 a.m. or 7:30 a.m. mark is when our digestive tract will be most active.
Right.
So often at that time people get the call of nature.
Okay. So if we're sleeping through that, are we literally kind of already disrupting nature's routines from the very start of the day?
Possibly. Mm. I certainly, I don't have enough data on that to say as a big, kind of population study, but I'm sure that there are people who know a lot more about rhythm than I do. Mm. I certainly know from my own experience that the time I go to bed and the time I wake up definitely affects the timing of my bowel habits throughout the day.
Wow.
And, if I don't get up at my usual time, or if I have to get up in a rush and race and I don't have, I can't take my time in the morning, then, you're not in that rest or digest mode then. So your gut's not thinking about, okay, it's time to go to the loo.
So should we be adding a third word to rest, digest? And should that third word be rest, digest, eliminate?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. And that is used in some resources as well. So, and eliminate is not only via the bowels too. This is going into a totally different topic, but, well, not totally different, but it's going on a tangent.
Mm. I'm tangent queen. Don't worry.
Yeah. But our general metabolic pathways of detoxification do not work so well if we're in a chronic state of stress, because, again, we're in that fight or flight mode. And your body is more concerned with staying alive than staying in mint condition. Mm. So therefore processes of detoxification and elimination slow down or shut off, and instead that energy is put towards, you know, increasing blood flow, blood pressure, dilating pupils, getting blood to the extremities and to muscles so that you can run or fight rather than rest, digest and eliminate.
Yes, don't worry, I won't be making t-shirts. I just think we should really start to include this in our thinking as to lead a healthy life.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, that was an hour of power. How that was an hour, I have no idea. I feel like it went so fast.
Yeah, and I'm sure we could talk for another hour just on poo and the bugs in it.
Yeah, I really think we could. You will have to come back.
Would love to.
Now, what's coming up for you? You mentioned a couple of things right at the start, but can you reiterate those? And I just want to also reiterate that there are a stack of show notes from today's episode, so be sure to check those out on the website. But yes, Helen, leave us with what can we do now to get more of your goodness?
Well, some exciting news. I've got another book coming out in November on gut health, and that is with Pete Evans as well. So there'll be a bunch of really good gut-friendly recipes in there. Yay. Along with a nice good section on the importance of gut health and how your digestion actually works, and what kind of things are important to have a look at if things aren't working so well, and what kind of implications that has outside of the gut. So autoimmune conditions and chronic inflammatory disorders and eczema and asthma and all that kind of stuff. So that's November. Working on getting a new website up that will have a lot more resources available.
Yay, and that's super soon, right? We've only got about a month to wait on that.
I hope so. Yeah, that's the goal. So if you do want to be notified of when that will happen, then please sign up to the nourished.com newsletter and we'll send you notification of when that's up.
Yay, fantastic. Yeah. Thank you so much for your time.
That is my pleasure.
So much generous information on one of the more taboo topics out there in health today.
Should be called taboo.
Taboo. I love poo puns. I just find them hilarious.
Oh, yeah. God, it might just be us.
I seriously make myself laugh so much. Oh, dear. Okay. No one else needs to hear this anymore, so I'm signing off with you now. I hope you guys enjoyed today's episode. Don't forget to check out those show notes. Thanks, Helen. Bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Thank you so much for joining me for today's episode of the Low Tox Life podcast. I would love for you to check out the show notes as well, and you can find those at lowtoxlife.com/podcast. Now, if there's anything that inspired you from today's episode, I would so love to hear and have you share that, maybe online. Use the Low Tox Life hashtag, and I can be found on Twitter or Instagram at @ALEXX_Stuart, Stuart. Now, if you liked what you heard today and you want to join us again next time, subscribing is a great way to be notified of a new episode. So hit subscribe, and I look forward to welcoming you next time. Bye for now.
Jackrabbit FM.
For your ears.
Who is that? Hi, Puck Pass.